Today's episode is brought to you by Condition One. While stationed in Africa, U.S. Marine Matt DeMeo faced his toughest challenge yet, his diet. Like many Marines, Matt wasn't eating real food on a daily basis. As a result, he had a constant fatigue and low energy. What he needed was the perfect performance bar, a well-rounded protein bar made from real food, one packed with a full spectrum of amino acids and protein, complex carbs and healthy fats, sustained energy, muscle fatigue prevention, and more. So Matt teamed up with a nutritionist and Condition One was born. From shoulders and gym lovers to those with active lifestyles, C1 can help you reach your fitness goals without the dry, chalky taste. And to honor his military roots, every C1 purchase helps veteran nonprofits. Condition One is exclusively offering our listeners 10% off the next online purchase. Head over to gocondition1.com and use the code POD10 to get your protein bar today. Hello and welcome to Monster Legend Podcast. I'm your host Tanner, and today we have a great guest today, Mr. Jason Lewitt, writer, creator, director, and producer.
Photographer.
Man of many hats. Thanks for having me on, Tanner. It's great to be on here.
It's great to have you on.
Yeah, and it's good stuff. And who doesn't like to talk about monsters, right?
I don't know. I met anybody who hasn't talked about monsters.
It's well, I think it's a topic we've been interested in as long as, you know, humans have walked the earth, right? It probably goes back to that whole fear of the dark kind of thing and what was out there. And yeah,
you're big cats and we're up in caves and stuff.
Oh yeah, big cats, big bears, you know what I mean? Swimming in all. Jaws is a prime example when you're swimming, you know, what's beneath the surface, right? So yeah, good stuff.
So who's Jason Hewlett?
Well, I guess, like, basically I'm a journalist actually by trade. I have 2 degrees. I have one in journalism and one in foundation film. So my first degree was, you know, for movie making, basically learned all the tricks of movie making, like the writing, directing. I think that was in the 90s when to be an independent filmmaker was a lot harder than now.
Yeah.
Everything was on film. It was expensive. So that never really took off. I did some docs and some short films. And then I ended up going to actual journalism school and I was a newspaper reporter for 10 years until our paper shut down. And I covered crime. That was my big thing, was crime, the crime beat. So yeah, that's kind of how I got doing ghost hunting and the show We Want to Believe over at Joe Blow Horror Videos. Everything kind of, my past caught up with me with my interests and boom, here we are.
This past week I was watching those We Want to Believe videos.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really good.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. It's fun. We've got a good team of people who are you know, all want to believe too. Yeah. They're normal, but they've got different, you know. Pete Wren, who's kind of our lead investigator, he's been doing ghost hunting 27 years all over the world. And he heads Vancouver Paranormal, which is like it's a government licensed society, but the only real one of its kind, I think, in Canada. And it's the oldest ghost, you know, paranormal investigation group in Western Canada, for sure, maybe across Canada in general. So it's good stuff.
I think Jason was on somewhere. Or you were in another podcast. And
yeah, Cryptid Campfire. I think it was on, yeah, with Eli Watson. Yeah, yeah. And I chatted a couple months ago with Shannon LeGros, of course, Into the Fray.
Yeah, Shannon's awesome.
She is. She's really cool. She's a really cool lady. It's actually what's neat, this whole microcosm of paranormal shows, podcasters, you know what I mean? Everybody I've met so far is awesome. They're all super nice people, like, which is great.
It is good. So what got you into like journalism?
Journalism was, I like to write primarily, like as a writer. I didn't care what I wrote. I just liked the art of doing it. And it was a way to kind of get paid to do that for a living. Cause you know, writing books is not always easy or viable, but you can get, you know, or to make money at it is pretty hard, and I needed to support myself. So journalism seemed like a good fit, and, you know, interested in current events, and got the degree and just ended up at a daily newspaper in the town I lived. I actually wanted to get away from here. And figured that the local paper hadn't hired anybody in 50 years who was at a journalism school, and I ended up the first one. So I got stuck in my hometown, but it's worked out pretty good since. And I think there's just something really cool about, you know, writing, you know, researching things, talking to people, compiling information and putting it into some coherent story, so it makes sense. People can kind of make up their own minds. So that's kind of how that came about, the journalism angle.
Well, what was your time like in film school?
Film school, it was 1994, believe it or not, when I did that. So I was in my early 20s. I didn't know what to expect other than I loved movies and I wanted to figure out how to make them. And there was a lot of, I was like one of the youngest people in the class. Everyone else was like, had done, you know, cameramen for TV news and stuff like that. So I was a noob, but it was exciting. And the only show really filming that was known that was filming in Vancouver at the time was X-Files. It was in its second season, was just kicking off. So there's a lot of seeing the X-Files shoot kind of around where we were, which was pretty neat. And it was like a year long program. It was very intense. We made a documentary and a couple short films and learned everything there was to know about making movies at the time, which of course was more analog. It was all film. Analog, you know, cut, splice, edit, kind of thing. Nothing like today, where it's all computerized and you can fix it as you go along and all that stuff. But it was neat. It was just it's a hard industry to get into now. It was even harder then, and it just didn't happen. I just kind of, when it was graduated and took a few shots at things and made some shorts and stuff, and it was expensive and it was easy to get disillusioned. So I was just kind of like, well, fuck it, I'm gonna go do something else at this point. I just don't know how this is gonna work. But it's nice to have that come around now to do We Want to Believe, where it's, you know, everything is, we shoot on digital cameras and it's a lot easier to do it yourself than it was back then, for sure.
How did they use cuts and edits and stuff in film? Would they have to actually cut the film?
Yep. You put it together with tape. Tape. Hours in a dark. I remember we were made a 10-minute short, and we must have sat. I mean, my co-editor, because I was an editor, and so was the other guy, sat for weeks, all day, in a dark room with like a screen bigger than, like smaller than the computer screens nowadays. Just watching the movie, seeing it. Okay, we want to cut here. The director wants to cut here, so you cut like literally like snip, tape it together. Hope you got it at the right point so it looks good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if it didn't look good, you had to do it again. But the only film was expensive. So, I mean, it was like $8,000 for like, you know, 2 minutes of film. So if you fucked up, to go and do it again was hard. Whereas now you've always got that digital file, right? And you kind of got the line of things up on the screen and you can just make your cuts or move it around or lengthen it or shorten it. And it's a lot easier, not easier, but better way of, I think, making a product now than back then. I don't know how. I mean, those editors, man, they deserved every Academy Award they ever won for doing it.
So Utah's crazy.
It is, because I, like, when you sort of mentioned you wanted to talk, like, you know, monster legends of Utah, I'm like, well, I didn't know much about it other than Skinwalker Ranch, right? Because that's kind of been very much in the public consciousness with books and a feature film. And there was a new on History, didn't they, had a new program
Skinwalker,
and so it was, I started wanting to start doing some digging, but it's kind of they got a lot of lake monsters there. Yeah. I never would have thought about, right? And their Bigfoot kind of stuff. And apparently at some point people even released a couple whales into a lake, hoping they would breed, and people saw that. So I don't know where you want to begin, man, but I'm excited to talk about wherever you want to start.
Well, let's start with Skinwalker Ranch.
Okay, yeah. So that's an interesting one. I read the book, but just finished like a couple weeks ago, the book that by Colmay Kelleher and then George Knapp.
How was the book?
The book was really good. Very detailed, because they got to spend, what was that the company called? I can remember. I'm glad I got it in front of me, because this is where my Saturday morning brain is a bit fried. But NIDS, which was I think one of the first really heavily funded scientific groups to look into paranormal investigations, were able to buy the ranch from the previous owners and spend like 3 years investigating it. And it's interesting because they could literally just sit and have a dedicated team there to investigate all this phenomenon. So they document that in heavy detail, more detail than I've ever seen in any other book before. Hang on here, I just want to get the name of the family. Sorry about that. I thought I had it on top of my head. The Gorman family, because they had purchased it. They were ranchers, and they had purchased the. It talks about sort of how the family purchased this ranch, and even the previous owners. Like the one thing that they kind of thought was weird is they went in. The previous owners had these big locks on the doors, like on the inside, to prevent something from outside getting in. And they just, whenever they had questioned the previous owners, it was just like, well, for personal safety, you know what I mean? But not go into any real detail. So it talks about that. And then how the Gorman started, one of the first things they saw was this wolf that was like larger.
This giant wolf. And they try to shoot at it.
Yes.
And like, it wouldn't do nothing. And shot at it.
Yeah. Yeah. They couldn't even see it bleed. And he would shoot at it with like, you know, a high powered rifle and then a shotgun. And this thing didn't care. It would just keep kind of advancing on them. So that was kind of the first real encounter. And then it just started into like the lights, like the blue and orbs in the sky.
Yeah.
More wolf-like creatures that would actually attack livestock. But what's weird, the couple things that really stand out, the Gormans talked about, was they'd have like a half dozen cattle that they knew they wanted to put into like, you know, a cattle trailer to move it. And they were in a pen. So they were patrolling. Tom Gorman and his wife Ellen were driving around. They said, okay, we got to remember to go do that. They came back and all the cattle were put into the travel trailer, like just crammed into it within 10-15 minutes.
That's weird.
It's stuff like that. And then being able to see these weird, they could see like rectangular orange thing light in the sky, but you could almost see through it into something else. And they'd see things come out of it into our world. So it's like, there's a lot of that. But once the NIDS team showed up and started doing investigations, they tried everything in terms like audio, visual, infrared, all these different techniques to capture it. They couldn't get anything solid, but they had lots of what we call in paranormal investigation, personal experiences.
Yeah.
Feelings, seeing something that wasn't actually caught. Like they even had one of these things in the ground and this arm come up. Like they could actually watch it happen with the naked eye. But it didn't turn up on camera.
Huh.
And these are scientists, right? So they're not going to make stuff up, you'd hope, to kind of corroborate something that most scientists won't even look at anyways. That's part of the problem with paranormal investigation. Any of this stuff is, you know, hard science doesn't want to take a look at it because of the number of hoaxes and just how you can't quantify it through a hypothesis and a repeatable controlled experiment. So it was written, the book's a lot about that and how it ties into, you know, Native American folklore, and legend of the Skinwalker, and and just trying to come up with some theory, which at the end, I mean, it's they present it. It's up to you to figure out if you're willing to buy into that or not. But it's a good book, really good book.
I'm gonna have to read it. I have like a thousands of like a whole list of books I need to read.
Oh, me too. A growing stack. What do you think is the best book so far you've read on the subject, even just of monsters in general?
Anything from like Lauren Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, they're all good. They're all, it's hard to put like say anything better than anything else.
No, it's true. The only ones I've come to realize that kind of are disappointing in some way are the stuff about the Warrens wrote.
Yeah.
Like Ed and Lorraine Warren. I don't know. The more I read about them, the more I think they might not have been as genuine as we're led to believe, right? So, but no, back to Skinwalker. It's an interesting book. I would really like to go there, take a look at it.
Or else, like you're reading about, like there's like UFO sightings there.
Tons, at least that's what they, yeah, like tons of UFO sightings for like even doc, like, you know, like I said, Native Americans would talk about seeing these UFOs back, you know, hundreds of years ago. So I guess the place is like considered one, it is considered a hot spot for all, but not just for like one, you know, some places are like you get the one phenomena,
yeah,
not the other. This seems to be like, it's got like poltergeist activity. It's got the UFO activity. It's got monsters. It's got unexplainable lights, orbs in the sky that don't really tie into anything. And it seems, you know, like they say in the book, it almost seems like it's a place where there's a gateway between our world and another dimension, another time, like another timeline, another something, which, I mean, that's a lot to digest, you know, someone who's an investigator.
Oh, it's like the silver, like, it's like back in the 70s, there's a little boy who saw like a silver UFO in the sky.
There's a lot of that, and that's almost like the UFOs that they would see there were of that traditional silver, you know what I mean, like the round, like you see on all the science fiction movies, almost sphere. It's been on the triangular shaped ones with the many different lights, and just unexplained, like lights in the sky moving kind of in unison together, kind of thing, that maybe they're a bunch of craft, or that's like that's the lights on a craft that you can't see. But these are all like, they're also silent. Like, it's not like there's a roar or an engine, you know, to make you think like it could be like a stealth bomber that someone saw. Like,
that's the weirdest thing about UFOs, is like how silent they are. Like, I wonder how they do it.
It's like impressive. The stealth bomber is pretty quiet, but you can still hear it. What I mean? Like, I don't know. And I mean, it brings up that question that I think that's what we all want to know, is like, are we being visited by beings from space or another dimension or timeline? Or is it government? Because a lot of the UFO sightings in the 50s were the Russian and the Americans spying on each other with spy planes, right? Is that still what it is? And we just taking the technology up a notch, or?
There was a documentary a couple of years ago about like how UFO, they were using UFO sightings as like a cover up for the development of stealth bombers.
Well, it was almost encouraged, right?
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, it ties into the whole Area 51 thing. Like, you know, Area 51 was a test, is still a test facility for state of the art military hardware. So if people believe that it's spaceships, it's a lot easier to get away with things if people are looking for spaceships and not the newest military toy, right? So I mean, that's into a whole different conspiracy realm, which I don't get too much into that, but it does beg the question, is that what's actually going on? And is even, they even touch on that in Skinwalker, is the military testing stuff there, and so it's to their benefit to encourage this whole myth about it being a paranormal hotspot, right? Because then everyone's not looking for the military tech. They're seeing, you know, because Gorman at one point in his son saw something which almost looked like, they described it like the Predator.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could see it was invisible, but you could kind of make out like something moving. So, and they were like, well, is that a creature or was it the government? Is it like, you know, this new, all, you know,
technology.
Technology for stealth and combat. I don't know. It's all out there to me, kind of thing. But it's fascinating. It's a really good book. And there's actually a movie, I think, just called Hunt for the Skinwalker, which is the visual adaptation, you know, of the book and what they recorded at the time, which I'd like to check out. There's a really, it's a decent movie. It's a fiction movie just called Skinwalker Ranch.
Yeah.
That came out back in 2013, that I watched recently. And it's loosely based on what's going on there, but it becomes this big, it's a horror movie, so it goes over the top towards the end, sort of thing.
Speaking of like paranormal movies, last night I watched Dark Skies.
Okay, yeah, the UFO.
Yeah.
One with Kerry Russell. What'd you think?
It's really good. It's really scary.
It is, isn't it? It's, I thought it was a neat, kind of reminded me a bit of Signs. It was a grounded approach to showing aliens. You know what I mean?
Remind me a little bit of, what's that UFO movie from the 70s, like Earth's Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah. Yeah, Close Encounters, except these were bad aliens, I guess was the only way, right? And in Close Encounters, they were just kind of, you know, benevolent creatures kind of thing. But oh, I thought it was really good. I wish it had done better. Dark Skies, it was quite entertaining.
So, there was a, what was that other alien movie that came out recently about the squid aliens?
Oh, Arrival.
That was really good.
Yeah, I loved Arrival. That was, I think, a pretty believable encounter between humans and another race. And it touched on playing with time a lot too, right?
Yeah.
Which is the Skinwalker Ranch stuff. That's what the one lead scientist determined is. He thinks it's something to do with time. And you know what we see is how, it, you know, you almost could drop into any different time frame. Like all time is happening at once.
Yeah.
And so what people are seeing, be it a monster or a or UFO or stuff, is just touching on these different parts of time in a different, you know what I mean? Like maybe Bigfoot is, we're seeing like primitive man, but he's crossing over into our time and we could drop into, or into his, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's a, it's a pretty out there idea, but I mean, scientists are already showing that you can, you know, bend time and you can drop into a different time frame that exists along with ours. So, I mean, is it that far-fetched? That's an explanation for all this cool stuff? I don't know.
Yeah, there was like a test done in Antarctica about like they're sending like solar stuff coming from the sun. It's supposed to be coming towards us, but it showed like some of them were coming back to the sun, like a different time, reverse time.
Yeah, it's weird. That's going on. And you know, I mean, I believe we have those experiences with deja vu, right? Where it feels like we've done that before. Maybe it explains that. I think we're so used to looking at things in a linear way. Like I think our brains like to think of things in a linear, you know, beginning, middle, and end, but maybe it doesn't work that way. We're just can't see it yet.
Hey guys, this is Eric and Jessica Carrier, the hosts of the Prairie Land Paranormal Podcast, and we are excited to officially be part of the Paranormality Radio Network.
If you're looking for a show with variety and are interested in taking deep rabbit hole dives into topics such as legend, lore, conspiracy, and creepypasta, all with a little bit of a storytelling, research, and personal experience twist,
check out our show at ParanormalityRadio.com, PrairielandParanormalPodcast.com, or through your favorite podcast player.
I don't know. It's interesting to think about, though.
It is. I was trying to look find like stuff more on like kind of skinwalkers. Like from Navajo and legends, but it's hard because like they don't really want to talk about it that much.
Well, the whole it's interesting. I have a friend of mine who married an Aboriginal up here, and his wife's grandfather was one of the people that was the guides where when the alleged Patterson film was shot. And they've got apparently even more of the footage, right? Because what we see as the big classic Bigfoot shot is just like one 20, 30 second part of the film. But we've been trying to get to talk to her, go talk to him, but they're very closed in what they want. You have to earn the trust before they will even. And they even the guy that wrote the book said that it was tough to get in with the Aboriginal community is in Utah to talk about it because they're very closed off in the telling of their stories. But I guess the skinwalker it's supposed to be someone that's like a witch.
Yeah,
it's a witch with real magical powers that can change into whatever they want, and they're not very nice. Either they're supposed to be quite evil, so the Aboriginals have a lot of belief in that. I mean, you got to take it. I take it seriously enough in that they believe it like wholeheartedly. There's no second guessing it, right? They just which is interesting. But to get in and talk to and interview them is not easy. About it.
So, what do you think about? What's your opinion on skinwalkers?
I don't know, man. I know enough, I think, to respect that if a culture believes in something strongly enough, there's got to be something to it in some way, right? Whether it's not like, maybe it's not supernatural, but it's some form of trickery. Like voodoo is something, if you believe in that you've been cursed by voodoo, you're going to get sick by it. But if you don't believe it, it doesn't affect you at all, right?
Yeah.
So I think it works kind of in that way. But I mean, there's some people are seeing something, and it's got to be come from somewhere. I like to think that, that all the explanations are a lot more natural than supernatural.
Yeah.
I can't prove that. if I was able to, I think we'd get, you know, any of us could prove any of this stuff was 100% real, we'd start getting a lot more answers a lot quickly, but we can't.
Yeah. Anybody listening? Well, hopefully somebody's listening.
I'm sure somebody is. Lots of people that probably are.
But skinwalkers are like a witch, like you said, they're like a witch, and they I think they're Ari Campbells. I forget.
Yeah, there's that quality to it, almost like the Wendigo concept, yeah. Right? Except they can shift back and forth. Like they can look like a person like you or I, but then they can shift into something else. Whereas a Wendigo, once you eat human flesh, you're a Wendigo.
Yeah. Wendigo's weird.
It is. It's creepy. I find that's one monster legend that kind of find unnerving in its way.
Probably a good, like don't probably shouldn't eat people or eat your family or your friends, the Wendigo.
It's a cautionary tale. <You know? laughs> Don't go around eating people. Just it's bad, okay? You don't want to be a monster.
Like literally.
Literally a monster, yeah. yeah, I thought that was like with Utah, I thought that was like that almost encapsulates everything as a paranormal investigator that you look for, right? It's got all those different elements to it. But I mean, there's a lot of other, they got like their Bigfoot monsters in Utah as well. And like we talked about earlier in the show, they've got their lake, like a lot of lake monsters. Like it's interesting.
Like the Bear Lake monster, I think.
Yeah. And that's the one, they all sound, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Tanner, but they all sound kind of similar. They're large aquatic creatures with like a big head with a big mouth, but they also have legs. Yeah. Like a crocodile. Almost. So it makes you wonder, back when these were all first being seen, did someone just actually see a crocodile? You know what I mean? Like a large, did one get loose and was it roaming around, or was it something else? But I know every Aboriginal culture has stories of, like, you know, aquatic monsters.
Yeah, like every state I've done so far, like every lake has like some sort of like lake monster.
Yeah.
Every single
lake has something, right? I mean, we've got our big one up here is Ogopogo in Lake Okanagan, which is 2 hours south of where I live. They do, and even there's a lake that, you know, our family would go to for like decades, but I only recently found out within like the last 6 months that it had one too. It was just they never really played it up in terms of a tourist attraction or anything. So I mean, they're literally, yeah, every lake seems to have something, and I wonder if, again, was that a way to explain why people disappeared? Water is a very water's scary, and it's a very powerful, if you believe it, it's a conduit for things as well, right? And our upcoming episodes of the show The Barn has a lot to do with water, and we had, you know, a First Nations person and even like a psychic say, like, water is a conduit, it's a way to travel between things or to lure things in. It's also cleansing, it cleans you, purifies you, right?
The portal.
Yeah. Yeah, portal to something. So maybe that's where these monsters come from. I don't know. Like, that's just throwing that out there, but it's definitely interesting stuff. I've never, that being said, I've been through, I love being on the water, and I've never seen anything in any lake or anything like that. I've even been to Loch Ness, and I never got to see a monster or anything like that, but it was pretty cool.
How was it at Loch Ness?
It was great. It's a beautiful spot.
Yeah,
it's beautiful spot. And it's like right on one of the main roads through, so you can kind of get out and look around. And it's neat to see a place embrace that story. Like, they've got boatloads of Nessie merchandise, from books to stuffies to, you know what I mean? Like everything Nessie. And then, you know, you can do lake tours to try to find it, to go out and see it. It's just, and they got the big Nessie statue right on the side of the road. It's really cool. Scotland's a beautiful place anyways, but yeah, Loch Ness is amazing. And it's big. Like, it's big. It's amazing how big a lake it actually is. So, and Loch Ness is shaped very similarly to our Lake Okanagan. So I thought that was interesting too, that both would have a monster and be similarly designed.
Bear like monster is like a dragon bear fish thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Dragon bear. Yeah, with like it wasn't the one with the horse's head, was it? It was kind of more dragonish. One of the other Utah like monsters had kind of they described as a horse like head, but the dragon bear concept, yeah. At least the dragon head is similar to the Okopogo, what it's supposed to look like. But more of a serpent body than like a bear, the bear-like body. And I guess reading up, doing my research, the Navajo, I guess, would call them water babies, and the monsters would try to lure people into the water.
Oh yeah,
to water eat them. Yeah, just water that's baby. Is scary. Like, you know, something which hence it can walk on legs, come up, and drag you back into the water, right? So you're not safe, even on land.
Oh, like the water. Were these ones where like the water babies would like cry or something? And
yeah,
you go out there
to see what it is. Like you think some kid's drowning or something like that, and then it gets you. That's kind of creepy.
Yeah, just random babies crying are insanely creepy to me.
I don't care where you are. Like, I have a child, and to hear him cry in the middle of the night was creepy in its own way when he was back at that point in his life. But there's an interesting, I don't know if it's so much with the Aboriginal community down in the States, but I know up here there's a spirit that's supposed to lure you. If you're in the woods, it will try to lure you away from your group of people in much similar ways. With crying, or it'll look like a friend of yours, and it'll try to lead you further out into the woods till you're so far away you can't get back, and then it gets you and kills and eats you.
I believe there's a lot of similar stories like that, like with the Lenora story. And I don't know, because there's one story in Alaska about it's like mermaid lady, like mermaid werewolf.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
like take kids and keep her them forever, like sucked her youth out of them.
There's just something wrong about that. Like, it's I know what you mean. Yeah, but I've heard of that too. I can't remember what it's called. But I think like these monsters, like maybe they started off as, you know, partly cautionary tales for people or to kids, right? About keep kids in line. I don't know. Like they. But every culture seems to have something, and they're all very similar.
Weirdly similar for like cultures that are like out like hundreds of thousands of miles away apart from each other.
Exactly. Like China had Bigfoot stories, kind of. You know what I mean? Gigantopithecus or whatever they would call it, like that. But the description is very similar to our North American Bigfoot, and you know, Yahweh is the Australian equivalent, and it's very similar to our, you know what I mean? Like, so there's enough of it all over the world that there's either something to it or everybody's mistaking something for something that it's not, you know what I mean? But same with like ghost stories, and you know, all this, they're the same all over the world too, and lake monsters and sea monsters. And I think it's all somehow interconnected in some way.
Ghosts are weird. Like I watch like, you know, everyone knows what ghosts, like, I don't know what ghosts are really. You know what I mean?
And I've been looking into it for a good number of years, and Peter's been doing it for 27, and we still don't really know either what they are, right? Yeah. I think that though it ties into, We are energy, right? Like we have energy within us, and when we die, we lose six. And so that one hypothesis is that that's our energy leaving the body and going out and just kind of combining with the other energy around us on the world. The world has like an electromagnetic field.
Yeah.
And that so ghosts are just that energy stuck that becomes part of the electromagnetic field and plays back like a tape recording almost, right? Yeah. And sometimes it's been more intelligent and you can actually interact with it. Like it's not just a recording, but something like this, our energy is still a lot, you know, kind of quote unquote alive and kicking and able to interact with the world around it in some way.
That makes a lot of sense.
It's a theory though. Of course we can't prove that. No one can prove that, but that's the one I think I'm most comfortable with.
Oh, like I always wonder like why, like there's like ghosts everywhere. Like, they seem to be like anchored to like places and things, people.
I think this is where it gets kind of kooky, but I think if you die in a particular way, like a traumatic way, it will then be anchored to that, a place or a thing, or maybe even to people. But if not, then maybe, and that's the ones that become residual. Like it's a traumatic thing. So you're held to that spot. And if not, you just kind of go out and they're the ones that can roam, for lack of a better word, or interact with you. It's something that Peter and I touch on in the book we're writing about stuff, is that kind of bit. And that's where the residual comes in, and trying to explain why that some are residual and some are intelligent, these hauntings. But again, like no one's scientifically able to take a good hard look at it.
Maybe one day there's something, better technology on how to communicate with them better.
I think that'd be cool, because what we're using, it gets better all the time, but what we use isn't, I mean, we use a thing called a spirit box, which uses different radio frequencies and plays them at different pitches and backwards and forwards. But the one thing, and we've gotten some good, like asking questions, you got like intelligent responses, like, is anybody here? Yes. What is your name? You get a name. But in the back of my mind and Peter's mind and people even on the team's mind from the show, is what if some trucker is just not tuning into that on the side of the road with a CB radio and fucking with us? You know what I mean? Like there's just that. I can't shake that from the back of my head. The EVPs that I've picked up that I find the most impressive are the ones where you're not using the spirit box, you're simply using a digital recorder. And when you've asked the question, when you were there physically, you hear nothing. But when you're playing it back, you're picking something up. But you didn't hear it at the time. And there's the odd time where I've actually, without even the headphones on, I've asked something and I've heard someone whispering off to one side, but they're few and far between. Those are pretty cool. And if you pick them up also on your digital recorder, that's even cooler, because you heard it, but you also got it. But the ones that I really find interesting are the ones where you ask the question, you get an answer, but you didn't hear it, but you recorded it. And I think that's, again, it's a digital recorder, it's electromagnetic frequency, right?
Right.
Yeah. At least I hope I got the terminology right for that. But those are the ones where I feel like I've actually got something of tangible evidence, as close to evidence as you can get ghost hunting, or snapping a picture of something and picking it up.
I was okay. Like camera stuff is weird too. Like I've been using like Kinect stuff, trying to find like an outline of people, of ghosts.
Peter's got some cool pictures of stuff that he's got, that he uses a crystal lens.
Yeah.
So crystal lenses cannot reflect light. So you're not going to get a, you know, like what JJ Abrams, like, you know, with his camera flares where he loves that. You don't get anything like that. And he has a great story. He was at a hotel doing an EVP session, sitting at the bar. No one else was in the room. He felt something, the presence of something, walk up beside him. It even smelled like a woman's perfume, but there was nobody there. So he had a remote camera that he could just click and it would take pictures. He fired off a bunch of shots. He got a woman's outline next to him on film. And that's one of his favorite bits of evidence that he's got. So as far as he's concerned, there's no way that could have been faked. Like there's no one else there. There's no light reflecting. It was just something that was starting to materialize beside him.
I don't know how else he was playing that.
Yeah, I I've seen the picture and I'm like, yeah, man, like I believe you. You're not a bullshitter. It would ruin your credibility as a paranormal investigator. But that's something. And I think that's one of the best pictures I've ever seen, because you can get mist and stuff and you can pass that off as whatever, right? Smoke or something. But that, you know, is one of the coolest things I've ever seen in terms of a picture of a ghost.
Do you, What was it like in the interview, the episode on with the demon jar?
With the demon jar? Yeah. That was, well, the jar itself was weird because basically this hotel that we were filming in has a history. I've known about it for years and people have died there. And at one point it was like social housing. It still is. So people have passed away from drug overdoses, etc. But part of this facility is also a functional nightclub bar. Sleazy one, but a functional nightclub bar. And one of the patrons that was in there was an Aboriginal man. And he went up to the manager with this vial jar thing and said, I caught a demon roaming around. Okay. You know what I mean? And you just keep this and don't ever let it out. And so the guy is okay. He doesn't know quite what to make of that. But what he noticed, and I saw it, and Peter saw it, and the rest of the film crew saw it, is at times, they taped it and sealed it up, just to be careful. Yeah. There was no water or anything in it, but at times it would mist up inside the jar, and then it would demist later and be completely clean. And I remember when we were filming, I even had it, and I put it at the end of the bar so we could shoot it, and it was completely clean, walked off, did some shooting, came back into the room, mist it up, wandered away again, doing something else, come back completely clean again. Is that paranormal? I don't know. I don't think so, but I can't explain it at the same time. It was, the guy said it was a demon. So and we picked up demon on the spirit box, plain as day, even though I don't believe in demons. Peter is an investigator for an ordained exorcist. He doesn't really believe in demons either, because of the 99.9% of the time you can explain it away as a mental health problem or a addiction problem or even just an attention getter. But there's 0.1% that there's something going on. He believes more, and I kind of do too, that it's more like a negative energy.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, if you're a good person in life and you become a ghost, you're going to be a good ghost, for lack of better words. If you were a murderous asshole in life, you're going to be a murderous asshole as a ghost. And that's more what that phenomenon is. So it was, yeah, the demon jar was a trippy thing. And I've never seen anything like that.
I'll probably like put it in like cement or something.
Yeah. I would not keep it at the hotel. You know, like that's the last place I would keep it. So cement, put it in a cement block and toss it in a river or something or a lake and just be done with it, right? But yeah, that was pretty interesting. And I mean, we got like lots of good EVPs at that during that shoot. And we had the demon jar phenomena. And it was pretty good. So it was a good way to kick things off for the series, except we got like many people COVIDed. It wasn't supposed to be four episodes. It was supposed to be less. We wanted to draw it out just in case we couldn't get out and shoot anything else again for a good long time. So with what the barn, which comes out on the 4th, it was a tighter shoot. It was an interesting shoot, but tied in with water, and we're just doing a good couple episodes out of it.
How long did you guys like film for? How long does the film take?
For the demon jar, we shot for like a whole day. Ooh. Like a full-on investigation for a whole day. Same with the barn. It was as well. We've got another investigation coming up that we shot like for an evening, like an overnight, almost an overnight kind of thing. And then right now we're in the middle of filming some Sasquatch episodes.
Nice.
So we've done two full days of filming and we've got one more to go that we're going to do a little more into the fall. Because that's just a lot harder. we're ghost hunters, not like monster hunters. So it's a lot different, but we brought along an Aboriginal storyteller who's had his Squatch experiences. So he talks about, and he actually caught what he believes is a Sasquatch yell recorded. He recorded it. Another part of that, we went up to this remote lake with a fisherman who'd been going there for 20 years. And every time when he's out on the water, he gets this one part of the lake, he hears wood knocks. And they start when he gets close, and as soon as he leaves, they stop. So we went up there to see if we could get something, and we got something, which kind of surprised me.
All right. Was the landscape out there beautiful? What are you doing here?
Oh, it's amazing. It is beautiful. And it's, I mean, this is like an hour, well, it's 50 kilometers, but like a 2-hour drive up a bumpy logging road to this place that's literally in the middle of nowhere, that some of the heaviest forest I've been in. Like it was one of the people involved, Sean, who I do From the Basement with, and he's our resident skeptic, but he's like, if something like this is going to exist, this is the spot. Because very few people are up there. You take 4 steps off the trail and you could be in the middle of nowhere. The lake is like remote, it's beautiful. So yeah, I believe something could hide up there if there is something, right?
Makes sense.
Yeah, if there is, and like I said, we got wood knocks, which I didn't expect, but in typical monster fashion, when you go looking for it in the spot where it's supposed to be, we didn't find it, but it came from somewhere else, like behind us, almost like something had circled back around.
Yeah.
It was neat. It's been a neat experience filming that, because we're used to going into dark, creepy buildings and abandoned buildings and stuff like that and looking for ghosts. So it's a very different experience to go looking for monsters.
Yeah, Bigfoot seems to like be everywhere.
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 Literally everywhere. And what I think is neat, as you probably found, is there's lots of similarities, but like different parts of, say, the States, you get different looking Bigfoot.
Yeah, there's like white albino ones, and there's one like skunk apes in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And like up in the Northeast, they're more like rougher, like have like mud all over them.
Yeah, and they're more aggressive seeming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like in the East Coast, they're an aggressive species. And the West Coast ones, maybe it's all the BC bud. They're just kind of chill. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're just sort of hanging out. They're not going to get too mad at you. Yeah, it's fascinating just how diverse that community, I don't know what you'd call it, but that species of monster is. But they're all the same at the same time, right? It's like people in different parts of the world or the country are the same. They're different. Like, and that, to me, I think gives it more credence that it's something.
Well, it's weird that like North America doesn't have like a giant ape. I guess
the closest we've got is it's Bigfoot, right?
Yeah. I don't know if South America does, Africa does, and Australia.
They don't. They're like I guess more like us, because they're an island, right?
Yeah.
But even like Russia and China and that have their ape-like creatures, monkeys, right? Yeah. Yeah, they're monkeys. So, but we never did. We have bears, yeah. And mountain lions and cougars and all that. And wolves, which are also European.
Yeah, wolves are. I've heard stories about like giant, like black wolves and black dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Stories all over the world.
The story. Dogs.
There's like a story of black and white dog, good and evil, hounds, like hounds of hell.
Yeah.
Stories.
Well, England has their fair share of that. Like Warwick Castle has its black dog it has these menacing red eyes. With these menacing red eyes, right? Like it's.
Yeah.
I guess when you think about it, monsters can almost be anywhere in any kind of way, shape, or form, right? Like,
right.
I think that makes them kind of cool. Where did your interest come from, if I may ask, Tanner?
Oh, man. I like good story. I probably just watching like old Disney movies and old horror movies, like the Wolfman movie, and reading like a bunch of like Goosebumps books and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Love stories. And
being, me too.
I like being scared.
Yeah, I do too. Actually, right? Like, I don't know if you found this, but everyone I know that is interested in the paranormal also loves horror movies.
Yeah.
And horror books and scary books. And maybe it's because we do actually like being scared. Like, or we want to know more about what's scaring us.
Yeah.
You know? And it's fun.
There's like, I guess you read about too, about that guy who like tried to put 2 whales in Salt Lake.
Yeah. To see if he could get them to breed.
Yeah.
But I think, no, I mean, that seems to be one of the stories that was kind of the muddiest to me. Like, because they don't, some people said that they would see things afterwards in the lake. And then others reported that they didn't see a thing. Which I could be wrong on that one, but I thought that was interesting. But
yeah. Back in the 1890s.
Yeah.
It was like from Utah and Carr.
I know there's a lot in there. There's the desert something. I had a bunch of articles about it.
Yeah. The desert. Desert Creek? I don't know.
Yeah, Desert Creek, which was a newspaper, I guess.
I guess they did a follow up on it, and like, they're pretty much like,
we're not so sure about that.
I don't know, maybe.
There was another one. It wasn't so much aquatic, but it was like this grave digger robber guy that they caught, who had gone and dug up these bodies and stolen their clothes and stuff like that. When they caught him, they branded him on his forehead like grave robber and cut his ears off, and then apparently set him loose on a raft, and nobody knows what happened to him.
Okay.
But I know, but people saw weird things, you know, in the woods, and there's a cabin. It's almost like a Jason Voorhees kind of, he lives in a cabin in the middle of nowhere and scares people. But I think I love stories like that, because that could be, that's the beginning of its own urban legend, right? Only rural.
Do you heard about the like leather man from like north eastern shore? He was like a hobo, I guess. Traveled up and down through the area. He had like a coat made of like old leather and stuff.
No.
Around.
Like, what is he?
He just like goes around doing some jobs and living in caves. Occasionally asks for food.
People. Weird.
The leather man.
The leather man. That's a cool story. That's where you get into like what do you think when you hear stories like, you know, about these urban legends, you know, like the hook man and the calls to the babysitter. I think those are cool. Like, in a way, they're kind of like monsters in their own right, just more of a people variety. You know what I mean? So maybe they aren't taken as seriously in terms of paranormal stuff. But I just think it's interesting how those stories are told all over, like North America, and they're very similar as well. And every town seems to have its version of it or a variation on it.
The hitchhiker.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Or the lover's lane, where someone, you know, don't go there because something bad will happen to you.
The lover's lane story happened after, what's his name, the Zodiac?
Well, there's the Zodiac was one, and then there's one, like, was it in Texarkana? They made that movie, The Town That Dreaded Sundown, about it. But that apparently was something real that happened as well. Not like to the degree that it was shown in the film, but that there was a guy who killed people on lover's lanes and stuff. There's a cool doc called Killer Legends, which touches on, it's one of the ones that.
Yeah, I need to like, it's another thing. I have a whole list of like documentaries I gotta watch too.
Oh yeah, me too, brother. There's like, so it's hard to keep up with all of them, right? Like, I'm a big fan of the small town monster stuff.
Oh yeah,
that Seth Breedlove really does. It's really good. And I think I like how they approach looking into these. It kind of, here's what we know. This is what people are talking about. Now you can make up your own mind. And that, it's something we try to do with ours too. Like, not really present, yes, this is what it is, but
this
is what we know.
Here's what we know. I like the story. I like that way of approach things. Like, I don't really like narrative, like I'm trying to tell you what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Documentaries. I don't really like that.
Well, no, because especially like, what was there? There's one, I think, was it Finding Bigfoot?
Yeah.
Where the guy just refused to not, you know what I mean? Like, he wouldn't let go. Even if someone came up with evidence to the contrary, he couldn't let go of it. And I don't think that is the right approach. Like,
I think it was more like a not like really documentary, more like a realistic narrative, I guess.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe that was sort of how he was approaching it, kind of thing. And I mean, I get it. If you believe strongly in something, you're not going to want to stop. You know what I mean? Like, for no real reason. But I don't know. I'm like you. I'm the kind of person who likes to have a documentary where here's the ideas, this is what we're talking about, and that you can figure out at the end what you want to believe about it.
I found something about like fairy folk in Utah as well.
Fairy folk. Yeah. I thought that was more of a UK thing. What's the skinny on that?
Some philosophers. Like gnomes, I guess.
Okay, little people.
Little bit Did you find like a lot of legends about you little people in the world, about cultures?
They're big. We talk about them a lot up here, especially again, it's a lot of it comes back because the Aboriginal were the first people over here, right? And they have a lot of those stories, and they believe like that Bigfoot and the little people, they're all part of this kind of other race that exists with us and in the forest, and they go into caves, you know, at night kind of thing, or come out at night more back in the daytime. And the little people are almost like the scouts that go running out and look for things, and they'll kind of lure you people. They take people and they lure people back into the caves, and you become their slave. And time travels differently there. Again, playing with time, right? So you could go in there and it might feel like you're in there for a night, but if you ever leave that cave, you could be like an 80-year-old man and just cack like that because you've been in there that long, right?
That's good. Yeah. Time's weird. I think about time a lot. Like, time's really weird when you think about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I try not to. Because it becomes a whole different ball game, right? But it's, I think there's something to it. I like this whole playing with time thing. Like, think of your life. Like, I know for me, I'm in my 40s. And now I have a lot of trouble remembering things from my 20s. Even though it wasn't that long ago.
I've... trouble like remembering like stuff from yesterday.
Well, yeah. I've become one of those people like I these are my reading glasses and I'll go looking for them, but I'm looking for them while I'm wearing them.
Yeah.
Because I forgot that I had them on. You know, like, but I think
looking for your sunglasses and it'd be like on top of your head.
Yep. Yeah, totally. So I don't know. But I think time is interesting. What do you think of you know, John Keel, who wrote Mothman Prophecies, his thoughts on these being ultra-terrestrials, all this stuff. And they just adjust what they want to look, what they look like.
Like they're psychically implanting these images into our heads.
Yeah, or they'll take on a form, like they'll look like a Mothman, or they'll look like a Bigfoot, and their craft. Because, you know, when UFO sightings through time have changed with the times. So we see space age technology is these UFOs, but back in the day they were like these flying Zeppelin blimp things. You know what I mean?
Cigar, like metal cigar shaped
objects. Tubes. So is that these ultra terrestrials projecting what we could conceive, and then as time goes on they project it differently and they come through as different beings that look different than us and they exist in a different plane of existence? He seemed very big on that whole different plane of existence thing.
It's possible. I don't know because I don't know what's possible.
Nor do I. I think that's something we don't know, right? Like, what is possible? We only use what, 30% of our actual brain capacity or something like that.
And our vision compared to like other animals is like kind of not the greatest.
No, which is why when you see like they believe pets see ghosts. When we don't, you know, when your dog or cat is just staring at something in the corner and its hackles are up and you're like, what, what's wrong? You know?
Yeah. And it's like that one shrimp, you know, like a whole like spectrum of vision that we don't have.
Mm-hmm.
The manis, was it the manis shrimp? Right off the top of my head.
But no, I agree. Like we aren't using all of our senses like we used to, because we live in places where we've got electric heat and light and all that, and we apparently had a lot more evolved our senses, and even like our sixth sense that people talk about when we had to survive in caves and out in the woods, because we had to survive, so we're using all this more, and there's no natural light, so we were a lot more in tune with whatever's going on around us that's maybe not normal but paranormal. But now, because of the way we live, that part's shut down because we just don't need it as much, and there's some of us who tap into that a bit more than others.
Very interesting. I'm sure there's like studies on it going on right now about like senses and how the brain works.
Well, yeah, I'm sure there's stuff out there. I just remember reading a book called The Occult by Colin Wilson, and he dedicates a whole chunk of the beginning of it to that. And then he talks throughout the book how, as we evolved and our belief in the occult and paranormal evolved, that it changed. You know what I mean? And to fully get life, we should start tapping into that more and accepting that more, and we get a lot more out of life.
What do you think about like the term paranormal? I think about it a lot. I think it's like unfair.
Well, or, it's become kind of a derogatory term, hasn't it?
Like, yeah. I don't know what paranormal, like, because we don't understand it, does it mean it's like abnormal, I guess?
I'm thinking that's how it works. Like there's normal, well, normal, which is what is the believed by mainstream society, which I don't put much credit into us as a mainstream society. So I don't think it's good to, how do you define, remember Mulder even said that on the X-Files, how do you define normal? But paranormal is, that anything they just can't explain. They haven't explained yet, I think.
Where you like, think about like a few centuries ago, pretty much this right here would be paranormal, what we're doing. Yeah.
Because I'm in Canada, you know, and you're not, but we're talking like in real time. We can see each other.
Yeah.
We'd be burned as witches probably if we claim to be able to do this.
If you like weird and strange history as much as I do, then I have the podcast for you. I'm Jason Horton, host of Strange Year. Each episode, I break down the strange history and cultural happenings during that year, like 1977, the Wow Signal, 1963, Three Tramps Theory, 1844, the Millerite Movement, 1997, the Phoenix Lights, 1896, the Shortest War, 2004, Benjamin Kyle, 1518, the Dancing Plague, 1985, the Move Bombing, 1972, Remote Viewing. So to get your weekly weird history fix, pause the podcast you're listening to right now and subscribe to Strange Year wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm trying to think about it a lot.
Yeah. But I think all of it, I think the answers, Tanner, for everything is there. We just have to be willing to keep looking and not be closed-minded about it.
Yeah.
Right? I'm gonna be open minded, and also we can't let our eagerness to find the truth cloud, you know, stuff that is, you know, just become believers for the sake of believing. I think that enthusiasm is dangerous too. Like you kind of got to come at everything skeptically.
So, that's my personal thing. So should I be like open but not naive?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Open but not naive about it, right? Like I've investigated with people with where anything was taken as pure hard evidence that it was, you know, that it was a ghost or it was a something paranormal in origin. Whereas you could explain, like 9 times out of 10, you can explain it as a natural occurring phenomenon.
Yeah.
Wind, like, house wind. Settling, you know, poor insulation, you know, passing car, trucker on the side of the road with a CB that's messing with you, you know, like for entertainment.
Open window or leaky pipe or something, you know.
Well, if you got time, I have one interesting little story that ties into that. Peter and I were investigating this haunted house, like literally an old haunted house, in the middle of February when it was minus 35 out and it was windy. We were in this room. It was a kid's room. It used to be a kid's room because this is a historical site, so it had these turn of this like late 1800s dolls, you know, the porcelain ones that look really creepy.
All the worst ones.
This room was full of all the worst ones, man. And we had had about, you know, 10 minutes earlier, we'd actually had a toy fly off a shelf, like for no explainable reason. So we were already, oh, wow, like there's something happening here. And we were over by this window. And suddenly I heard like this, like, ooh, sound, like, straight up. And I was like, what the fuck? I said, Peter. And I'm like, he's like, what? I said, I heard. Did you hear it? And he went back. He has a digital recorder that you can keep recording and play back at the same time. And he listened and he heard it. So we both are standing trying to figure it out. And suddenly it went again like this ooh, kind of thing. And Peter's like, holy fuck, that's like right next to me. Like, oh my God. And so we're all like, just like, wow, this is actually happening. And then we heard it again. And then again. And then again. All near the window. So we started looking and there was like a hairline crack in the window. Yeah. And you could feel the wind blowing through whenever the wind would blow and feel on your hand. And that was causing the sound. It sounded like a ghost.
Wow.
But you know, if we were totally like, yeah, it's evidence, and just get out of the room, but you got to look and start explaining. The toy came off when completely the other side of the room, where there was no way that not something could have knocked that toy off a shelf. So it was, we believe that whatever it was moved by something in the room. It wasn't the wind from the window, but the wind from the window certainly made it associates with ghosts.
I'll be creepy.
It was creepy. Not going to lie. It was creepy, especially because we actually had other stuff happen that we couldn't explain away in the room, but that one we could. So we couldn't count it as evidence of anything.
Did anyone like, what was the story about that room in particular?
We don't really know because we don't know. Like, it was, there was a family that used to own it before this, the Heritage Society took it over. And it was the kids' room. And the family had just left the stuff there to show what a kid's room might look like back in, you know, the late 1800s. There's been stories that someone had died there. You know, we don't know if it was a male or female. And we picked up an EVP of a person named Tom, and we went look back, and there was a Tom that was one of the former owners of the house. So.
But did he, or I guess he died there, I guess. Must have.
Maybe. Or he liked the place so much, he just decided to come back. You know, after he died. That, you know, and sometimes, you know, spirits do just kind of pass through. They don't have to stay connected to a place unless something really bad happened that kept them there. So.
That was interesting. Are you familiar with the, kind of worry about talking about Henry at all?
Henry? What's the story of Henry?
He's like a haunted doll.
Okay, like an Annabelle sort of thing, or?
Yeah. I don't want to talk. This freaks me out talking about it. It's so okay.
Yeah, there's something about dolls, right? That are just kind of creepy in their own right, and you attach a ghost to it or something, or an evil spirit. I don't know. But even Annabelle, because it's tied into the Warrens, I don't know if you can even believe the real stories about Annabelle. It's scary. And the fact, I think the actual Raggedy Ann doll is creepier looking than the doll they used in the movie. But I guess they couldn't get the license to the Raggedy Ann doll to use it, so.
Kind of like, is that Raggedy Ann doll based off the, what's that orphan?
Little Orphan, like, Annie?
Annie, yeah.
I guess think it's somehow based on that whole idea.
I think so. I don't know.
I remember as a kid, there were like Raggedy Ann and Andy books and stuff like that. Yeah. Like, yeah. But I don't know where one originated from the other or not. I know Little Orphan Annie was a movie and a comic strip and a thing. It was well before my time.
Still a great movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's awesome.
I want to go to Utah just to take some pictures and stuff.
Oh, I'm with you. As soon as they open the border up, you know, yeah, and stuff like that, I'd like to go down too and see if I could find Skinwalker Ranch. I don't know if it's marked anywhere officially on a map or a calendar, not a calendar, like a map or GPS or Google Earth. It must be somewhere. I'm sure if you Google, I wonder if I could pick it up on my phone. Hang on. I'm going to try an experiment here. See if I can find it. Skinwalker Ranch, historical landmark in Utah. Yeah. It does come up on Google Maps. Nice. That's pretty cool. Well, it's sold. As soon as we can travel, I'm going. Go check it out.
Did you find anything about red-haired giants in Utah?
Let me just go back here, because I found a bunch, like the North Shore Monster, Myths and Real, Old Ephraim, Monstrous Grizzly Bear, that actually did terrorize livestock owners for a decade, killing as many as 150 sheep.
Oh.
Bear Lake Monster, Bigfoot. With Bigfoot, there's ties a bit into the red-haired. You mentioned some with red hair. So maybe that's the same thing, do you think? Or
I mean, it's like back from, like, they found some bones, I guess, back in the 1890s. The sun claimed to be, it's called to be 11 inches in diameter and the feet 19 inches long. Stone tools, pottery, and copper items were found in an area along the most Curious find was a necklace that had 3 copper medallions adorned with a circle of writing.
That's cool.
Could be like a really big guy though.
You know? It could be. And I mean, there's a whole belief pattern that the Bigfoot's just a bear people are seeing walking on its hind legs, which is rare, but they do that.
Yeah.
But I don't think you can account every single Bigfoot sighting as a bear on its hind legs, considering, you know.
Plus bears are kind of skittish too.
Yep. Yeah, they are. And some of the Bigfoot stories, they're the complete opposite of them. They're quite aggressive and, you know, will come at you. I mean, one thing I want to try on our last filming date is apparently if you play the sound of a baby crying in the woods, it'll bring them out. I want to try it, but I want to make sure I'm right near my truck so I can get out of there just in case. The rest of the team isn't quite so keen for me to try it, actually. So we'll see what happens.
We terrified, like a whole like squad of them show up.
Oh god, I couldn't even imagine that.
Oh no, it's a bad idea.
There's no baby. There's no baby. We're sorry. Don't want to get beat to hell by a Sasquatch, that's for sure.
Or like they're super intelligent and they're like articulate, like conversationalists.
Could like, you imagine? I think then, like that would be fantastic. I got so many questions to ask.
Like, why don't we think we're smart for? Because we don't wear clothes?
Exactly. Why are y'all wasting time wearing clothes? Like, you know, just grow hair. Easier to clean. Save a ton of money on, clothing and laundry bills and all that kind of stuff.
What do you think about UFOs?
Well, that... Sean's our big UFO enthusiast. I mean, I think obviously there's enough out there. People are, again, like there's something to it. I think it would be naive of us to think that we are alone in the universe. And that there aren't races that are more developed that could come and visit us. The question that I would ask is, well, why then are they coming here? And aren't they just, you know,
hi.
Hey, here we are. Let's chat. I think a lot of stuff, I still am a big believer in the spy plane theory. Yeah. And it's just part of the countries spying on each other. But at the same time, people are having these experiences with stuff that does seem extraterrestrial. I mean, how do you explain the grays and the abduction stuff? And I think there's so much more going on that it can't just be an elaborate hoax perpetrated by the government.
Of course, abduction stuff happened, like big spike in abductions after like MK Ultra came out. Was happening?
Yeah, right. I mean, they're very similar to sleep paralysis and, you know, the stories of the old hag that, you know, there's all these different sleep paralysis-y stories.
Yeah, the old hag, the hat man, shadow hat people. Man.
Yeah, where I mean, I've had sleep paralysis. It's not fun and it's terrifying, but I don't think the ghost was coming in or an alien, you know, they never turned into that kind of thing. It's not a good time at all. But I think, I don't know, like maybe it's a combination of stuff, you know, maybe we are seeing spy planes and maybe our beings beaming themselves in from another dimension or another planet too. And maybe the government does know about it. And we're pretty skittish as a race. Like if suddenly someone came up and said, yep, they're here. I think a lot of people would lose their mind. You know what I mean? And not able to handle it.
Definitely. Like you're saying with like putting an idea, like a Keel was saying about putting idea of like images in our heads, or I think there could be like the UFOs or aliens themselves, like they're be organic.
Well, and that's even something in the Skinwalker book, like there's these orbs that they said definitely weren't like a craft, but it worked with an intelligence. And it would interact with people. And I mean, it was even, they claimed, responsible for killing dogs that were chasing it and trying to catch it. And so, yeah, some of that maybe is just a different species, you know, or being, a form of being that's just there. and it's interacting with us, right? And the only way it knows how. And even in sometimes they hypothesize maybe it scouts for other stuff, you know, coming and taking a look first, and then we come ripping in. And
I think versus, like, like you're saying, I think it's stupid of us to think like we can be the only planet with life in the universe. Yeah.
And come on. You know, like, and I mean, there's so many stories around the world that tie in that seem so much similar, like all these different kind of religions that are similar enough. Who's to say it wasn't just people, you know, they're talking, you know, God above. Well, UFOs come from the sky. You know what I mean? And maybe that was it. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like, maybe we are a colony. Like, we're on the Australia of some other planet. I don't know.
Yeah, there's like the idea of like ancient lost civilization that, like, Atlantis and
the Mayan temples and their ruins and all that. They just disappeared, all up and vanished. Maybe they got back on their ship. They're like, nah, we're done here.
Yeah, it's like, weird about like pyramids and stuff too. Like, all like the Aztecs and Mayans had like a very similar structure with like Egypt and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was similar enough, right? Like, but they were on completely other sides of the planet.
It's weird. Like, maybe, like, I don't know. How come isn't it, like, how come isn't it like a dome?
Yeah. Maybe they just like pyramids and shit. I don't know. Like, you know, or stuff that looks like that.
Maybe this is easier to build. Makes sense. Yeah, it could
be. Domes would be hard. Even if you build domes out of blocks, you kind of got to make them curve. You know what I mean? Like, it would be, I used to build Allen block walls. It's a lot easier to build a flat straight wall than a curved one. You know, I don't know.
Do you think Skinwalker Ranch is like, what's that triangle place in the Bermuda Triangle?
Yeah. And there's also like other parts in the world where there are like these hot spots. And I think, like, Bermuda Triangle is a whole other beast altogether. Like, their science has really taken a good shot at trying to prove that it's a natural occurring phenomenon from underwater. But I think that there's places on the planet, like Stonehenge, you know what I mean? There's another one where all those ley energy lines are supposed to collide or something, and they're just stronger. And maybe that's how this stuff is allowed. Again, tying into Earth's magnetic field and electromagnetic energy. And these places that are high in it pop more than others.
Yeah, it's like the electromagnetic field like affects us. I heard about stories about certain like houses, like the electromagnetic field there would like make you feel like weird.
I've been in houses that make me feel completely off.
Me too. It's sick. Sometimes I'll go somewhere, like, it doesn't happen very often, but I'll go somewhere and like, I don't like it here. It's weird.
Yeah, yeah. It's not fun at all.
I'm like, I don't know what it is, but ugh.
Yeah, it's that uncomfortable sensation that you're left with, you know. And some people take that as a sign, like, you know, for hauntings, that this place might have something not good there. It just feels off or sad or whatnot, but maybe the EMF readings are too high. Although they haven't come up with a measurable form of EMF when you start to get those feelings. You know what I mean? There's not a consistent rate, even that causes hallucination.
Maybe they take more samples, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe like a, I don't know, like how to put it. Like more samples to it. Get a consistent basis.
And that's what they seem to be having trouble with, is measuring it consistently. It seems different in different places. I don't dig too much into it. We don't use EMF readers that much anymore, like Vancouver Paranormal, as they used to, because of that inconsistency. Like Peter, like the place where the dolls were, there was no EMF at all, and we were having stuff happen that we couldn't explain. So
maybe, I need to figure out how to hide it or something.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Then it's smart. Maybe I don't know what's going on, right? Smarter than us, even.
So the next episode is on the 4th?
Yeah, September 4th, we drop, we start a new investigation with a brand new episode called The Barn. And the first episode of The Barn is called Bloody Hay and Sights. And it'll be up at Joe Blow Horror Videos that morning around between 9 and 10 Pacific. Nice. So noon to 1 Eastern. We're pretty excited about it. It's very different than if you've seen the Demon Jar. This is very, very, very different. A very different kind of experience. And we're really like that every investigation we've gone on has been different enough so that the show doesn't always seem the same. So yeah, it'll be good. And I hope people check it out and like it.
I'll watch it for sure.
Thank you, sir.
Well, have to get going. But
you got work. Tanner, you unfortunately got to go to work, but I thank you for your time today and I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was good. And I look forward to it.
So where can people find you?
You can find for the show, we are on Facebook, so you can just search out We Want to Believe the series and it'll come up. And if you actually now just Google We Want to Believe, there's enough stuff coming up. We're building a website. I'm on Instagram at jhewlett72, so jhewlett72, and on Twitter at jasonhewlett72.
Nice. I will make sure to link that in the show notes.
Awesome. I can even send you some stuff if you want, like anything you might need. When do you want to put this up?
It should come out on Monday.
Okay.
So, happy Monday, everybody. It's Monday, by the way. well, Saturday now, but I still have to like. Oh, Virgo, how do you like deal with like hard cuts? Because I know, like, I'm fixing to do like multi camera thing here, set up here soon. So how do you like deal with like hard cuts? Because there's a delay when I switch cameras.
Ooh, see, a lot of our stuff is done in post, right? So yeah. Afterwards, but I mean, you could just. It's just like, what do you use for your editing?
Like, some free software I got. I forget what it's called, like the split something.
Okay. Let me find that out. I'll ask Jason, who's our editor, what he uses, and that might be the way, you know what I mean? Obviously, you don't want to spend thousands of bucks for like, you know, film editing thing, but what would be a good, easy editing? I mean, even if you've got like iMovie. It's pretty good. It might make it just a bit easier. But I mean, when you're doing sort of a dramatic shift in image, it's going to seem a bit not as abrupt. Smooth anyways.
Yeah,
abrupt. It's going to seem abrupt. But that I'll ask him what he would recommend.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Well, have a good day. Thank you.
You too, Tanner. Thanks very much, man. I really appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Thank you for listening to this episode of Monster Legend Podcast. You can find everything you need to know about Monster Legend Podcast at monsterlegendpodcast.com. There you'll find a social media feed, episodes, and where you can subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. It's all free. It's all available on your computers and mobile devices. So check it out. And thank you. And share with your friends. And don't be afraid to ask me any questions. In any comments or a voice message, which you can find in the link down below in the show notes. Thank you.